He had the normal pressures of any college kid, but things were on the upswing when he got called into work early that day. His car was being fixed, he had a new job, and he was saving up money to return to school in the fall. But that was more than 20 years ago, and he hasn't been seen since. This is the story of Jason Jolkowski, the college radio DJ who finished his chores and then simply disappeared into broad daylight. Hi friends, I'm Katie, and this is Katie Does Crime. Thank you for joining me for the first time if you're new here, and hello to the usual rapscallions and reprobates. Please consider subscribing or joining me on Patreon if you'd like to hear more true crime stories. You may have heard of today's case, the disappearance of Jason Jolkowski. My longtime viewer, Robin Reginald 9372, recommended it to me a while back, and the case was new to me, although it certainly had its fair share of coverage. Still, I don't think you can ever have enough coverage when it comes to a missing persons case. And I also know that when it comes to cases that interest me the most, I'll listen to anything that comes out about them. If that's you too, hopefully I'll bring something new about this case today to you. Our story begins on June 13th, 2001, when Jason Anthony Jolkowski was asked to come into work early. I'm not going to lie, the fact that he worked at Fazoli's didn't hurt when it came to me deciding to cover this case. It's an Italian fast casual chain that started in Kentucky, so it's close to my Midwestern heart. They bring their unlimited hot breadsticks right to your table without you even having to ask. Born on June 24, 1981, 19-year-old Jason had been studying broadcasting at Iowa Western Community College, but he was home for the summer in Omaha, Nebraska, serving up pasta so he could pay for school in the fall. His car was being worked on for hail damage when he got the call from work, so he said he would just walk the 4 miles to the restaurant. Not a big deal for him. But a coworker called back and said she would pick him up. She didn't know exactly where Jason's house was, though, and this was a time before Google Maps, so they decided to meet at Benson High School, just several blocks from his home. Their meetup was scheduled for 11 a.m. Jason's parents were already at work, so he told his younger brother to have them pick him up later. He started walking toward the school, stopping first to bring the garbage cans back to the house from the curb. But his coworker says he never showed up for his ride. She called the Fazoli's from a local gas station and then went back to work. The Omaha police said he probably just ran away from home, citing his age. But like, someone who's about to turn 20 years old doesn't need to run away from home. They can just leave. Jason's grandmother said that he wasn't the type, that he would never miss calling his dad on Father's Day. And anyway, she said, what kind of person runs away from home in their black dress pants, black dress shoes, a Cubs shirt and hat, with their red work shirt in hand? She said he would have more likely waited until his car was back from the shop. Plus, he was working to pay for school and was actually starting a second job soon that he was excited about. Without the help of the police, the family called Jason's friends and other coworkers and checked the college radio station where he used to work. He was hoping to become a professional radio DJ after college.
89.7, The River, the New Music Evolution. My name is JJ. We're in the middle of 8 in a row. We got music coming up from REM, Papa Roach, and whatever else you want to hear. Let me know. 323-4100 or #489.7 your Verizon wireless phone. And that's how you're getting it done. That's what makes you just a little bit happier. That's my goal all around here, is to make everybody as happy as I can.
But no one at the radio station had heard from him, and his bank account and cell phone went untouched. He never even cashed his last paycheck. The family posted flyers around town with the help of the local church with Jason's description. 6'1", 165 pounds, brown hair, and brown eyes. His family called him responsible, a good kid. His mom said the only thing she could think was that his learning disability may have had something to do with it. He simply learned things more slowly than other people and had a hard time giving directions. But his mom said his IQ was actually above average. Finally, after 10 days, the police started interviewing neighbors and searching for Jason. A lot of people on blogs and forums say that the police obtained the school security footage and it didn't show Jason ever arriving. But I wasn't able to find a real news source reporting that, so please take it with a grain of salt. I do hope the cameras were checked, though. 2 weeks after his disappearance, the Omaha World-Herald reported that someone had possibly spotted Jason at Mahoney State Park the previous weekend. It was about 20 miles from Omaha. The person said they thought they had seen someone matching Jason's description, but after being shown a picture of Jason, they weren't so sure anymore. Police searched that park for hours that week, though, just to be sure. And I love that the authorities acted on this and the newspaper reported on it. It just goes to show how seriously they were taking the case. A week later, on July 3rd, it was announced that a reward was being set up with Omaha Crime Stoppers using funding from the companies Jason's parents worked for. His dad was a warehouse supervisor at Nebraska Furniture Mart, and his mom worked for the agricultural tech company DTN. And I have to tell you that this little tidbit was so cool to me. My dad is a farmer and always had a DTN terminal in our house when I was a kid so he could check the weather and look at the commodity markets and see the cost of corn and soybeans. And I had never heard the word DTN outside of my own home, so I thought that was neat. On July 10th, the Daily Nonpareil out of Council Bluffs, Iowa, published a story about the 200-some missing people in Iowa at the time and mentioned Jason because he went to college there. A detective said that most missing people are kids who run away from home and are found quickly. He said it's also sometimes easy to find adults because they leave a bank or driver's license trail. But he said, over a period of time, if there is no activity on anything they would need to survive, like money, we have to begin to suspect that something is wrong. The Omaha World Herald continued to write stories about Jason, calling him shy and quiet, but saying he would go out of his way to help people. They said he was on the honor roll and loved his family and church. During Perpetual Adoration, the devotion program where Catholic people take turns praying day and night, 7 days a week, Jason would take extra shifts to cover other people. His pastor said he had thought about becoming a priest. His parents said he wouldn't have taken his own life because of his faith. A woman who had worked with him at the radio station said he was one of the nicest guys you'd ever meet. Another said he was so enthusiastic and peppy on the radio and would do anything for anyone. His DJ name was JJ, and he loved to cover sports. His parents agreed with his radio station coworkers, calling Jason generous, considerate, and unusually polite. His mom said that of course he had pressures in his life, like paying for school and getting his car fixed, but she thought things were looking up for Jason with his extra job at a customer service center about to start. The new company even had a tuition program. A month after his disappearance, Jason's mom started a website called Prayers and Posters to spread the word about Jason in case he had ended up in another state. She said, "We feel someone, somewhere, knows something about where our son is. We have to find that someone who may have seen something." The website is now defunct, but archive.org still has a lot of it cataloged. I thought the family's message to Jason was touching. "Jason, if you are out there and if you can read this message, you must know how much we love you. Please come home. We miss you so much. You might feel that we can't forgive you for being gone so long, but we already have. You might be embarrassed, but please don't let that keep you from coming home. We have your car fixed and ready to go for you. Together, we can face any problems that you may be having. Your entire family and friends are cheering you home. All that you need to do is take the first step. Don't look back, just look forward. You have a bright future ahead of you. If you aren't quite ready to come home, could you pick up the phone and call us? Please, son, just reach out your hand to us. We'll be there. Love always, Dad, Mom, and Michael." I also thought the FAQ section on the website was interesting. The family seemed understanding that the police were doing their best, but said they had hired two private detectives of their own. They said they weren't angry with God, and they knew he would only give them challenges they could bear. But their thoughts on hiring a psychic were the most interesting. The FAQ question was, "Why don't you seek help from a psychic?" And their answer was, "We believe that only God knows the answers that we seek in regards to our son's whereabouts. We also believe that it may be his will that this is not revealed to us. Of course, we want to know that he is alive and well, but we must trust in God. If someone hired a psychic on our behalf, we would listen to what was told to us, but in the end, we would not hold to that revelation as the absolute truth. We have ongoing expenses due to Jason's disappearance, and hiring a psychic does not fit into the budget. It reads very let go and let God to me, but I also know they were doing everything in their power to find Jason." His parents were worried that no news would make people forget about the case or think it had been solved, so they really did such a good job at generating content to keep hope alive. In October, a local blues concert was planned, and free CDs would be handed out containing photos of Jason and other missing people. One of the artists set to play was called Baby Jason and the Spankers, which I really enjoyed. Probably no relation to Jason Jolkowski, though. Please excuse my bad joke there. Jason's mom had business cards printed up with his picture on them. His grandparents wrote a plea in the newspaper for people to spread his website to everyone they knew. They had prayer vigils and masses. Jason's mom said, "I think we'll always continue to have hope. We have hope, and we will continue to have hope until we know what has occurred." Still, there was nothing to go on. Just a neighbor who had seen him bringing in the garbage cans at the same time his brother did on the day he disappeared. On the one-year anniversary, Jason's grandparents' local paper, the Grand Island Independent, published a front-page story about the grassroots campaign the family had created to find Jason. This article discussed a missing persons law in Iowa that Jason's mom also hoped to establish in Nebraska, Legislative Bill 203. In Iowa, there was a 24-hour toll-free hotline to call if you wanted to report a missing person, report a sighting, or just request information. There was also a website with information about those who had disappeared. Jason's mom hoped that Jason's law would help families like hers in Nebraska. In February 2003, it was announced that Jason's parents would speak in front of the State Judiciary Committee about their son, other missing Nebraskans, and why this bill was needed. At the time, the state only kept vital statistics for children 16 and under, but the Jolkowskis wanted the Nebraska State Patrol to maintain a website for all missing people with a uniform reporting system. They also hoped officers would be trained on preventing kidnappings. In the meantime, the family started a nonprofit called Project Jason, geared towards supporting the parents of missing children and helping them deal with their grief. Jason's mom said these families live in limbo, not knowing whether to hope or move on and try to heal. In April 2003, the Grand Island Independent reported that a series of coincidences led to the Jolkowski family going on the John Walsh show, but that the family believes there's no such thing as a coincidence. They had tried to get on America's Most Wanted in 2001, but never heard back, although the show did post a link to Jason's website on its own website. But at the time, the host of America's Most Wanted had his own daytime show, The John Walsh Show. And the family actually knew someone who was going on that show, so they sent along information about Jason with that person. But again, they heard nothing. They weren't mad about it, though. They knew thousands of people must be trying to get attention for their missing loved ones, too. But in February 2003, Jason's grandmother was in New York City with her 15-year-old granddaughter, and they tried to get tickets to the John Walsh show. The granddaughter was too young to be admitted, though, so they went to the taping of another show. And wouldn't you know it, as they were leaving that taping, NBC employees were there handing out tickets to the John Walsh show. The grandmother was able to find a way to go alone and was seated right in an aisle where John Walsh stood and talked to the audience between segments. She was able to tell him Jason's whole story, and the show arranged for the family to make a later appearance. She said she felt angels had been watching over her and made it all possible. I wasn't able to find the episode where they appeared, so you'll have to let me know if you have evidence that it ever happened. I know the show was only on the air for 2 seasons. This was back in 2003, and honestly, that's sort of where we are now. Still stuck in limbo, wondering if Jason will ever be found. Jason's mom appears to be now using her maiden name and is living in Washington State. She still posts birthday messages for Jason on Facebook and tries to get the word out about other missing people. Jason's dad does the same, remembering the first time Jason beat him at basketball and how he grew from a shy first-time DJ to becoming Jamming JJ. Jason's younger brother Michael, possibly the last person to ever see him alive, was in the Nebraska National Guard and served in Afghanistan and is now married with 3 boys of his own.
I didn't realize it's been 20 years. That's a long time.
Chester Link, a former neighbor, says he was one of the last people to see him that day walking towards the school.
I don't understand how someone could just vanish with no trace, no foul play, nothing like that.
There's a tree at Roberts Park planted off the Keystone Trail in honor of Jolkowski. Sunday afternoon, friends, families, and neighbors gathered to share memories, paint and hide rocks with the hashtag #FindJasonJ.
I remember one time he had this idea to do a popsicle race as which color would melt the fastest. And I know red won.
The National Center for Missing and Exploited Children created an age progression photo that shows what Jolkowski would look like now at the age of 39.
Someone does know something. We need someone to come forward and help, you know, alleviate all our pain.
The family might be happy to know that a case that was supposedly related to Jason's has apparently been solved. A man named Samuel Sherman was reported missing a month after Jason, and the two lived close to each other and were about the same age. Some people always believe the two cases could be related. However, there was so little information on Samuel's Crime Stoppers listing, not even a photo, that some people even doubted he ever existed. But a user on the Web Sleuths forum was actually able to track the man down on Facebook a few years ago. The Omaha police verified that it was indeed the same person who was supposedly missing. Samuel Sherman was just living his life. I'm not even sure he knew he was missing at all. Though we'll probably never have such a break in the Jason Jolkowski disappearance, his family's efforts to keep his case from going cold can serve as a model for other families. There were never any new leads, no new information that suddenly turned up, and yet Jason's name was always in the news. There was a Miles for the Missing family bike ride fundraiser in April 2004, a Project Jason benefit concert in June 2004, and an appearance on the Montel Williams Show in November 2004.
This has been like a nightmare that you do not wake up from. And every night when you go to bed, you wonder, where is he? Is he safe? Is he warm? We still always have hope, and I'll always have hope until I know what has become of him.
Please welcome Kelly and her husband Jim to the show. Welcome in. Tell us about your son. Tell us a little bit about your son.
Jason is a very loving and generous person who loves to laugh and loves life, loves his family very much, enjoyed being a homebody, and that was okay.
The family made new missing posters in June 2006 and hosted a poster hanging event around a local park. In November 2006, a businessman in Philadelphia heard about Jason's case and offered a new $100,000 reward. There was a bowling fundraiser for the 10th anniversary of Jason's disappearance in June 2011, where his dad dressed up in costume. If the local newspapers weren't talking about Jason himself, they were talking about how his family was helping other families find their missing loved ones. When amateur sleuth Todd Matthews helped start the NamUs database for missing persons, Jason's was one of the first profiles he created. Because the case has received so much attention, there are so many theories of what might have happened. Generally, people think it's unlikely that someone targeted Jason specifically, since he wasn't supposed to be going into work that day. Some speculate that maybe someone hit him as he walked along the road that day and then covered it up. Some say maybe he fell down a manhole or a sewer pipe from the construction that was always going on around Omaha. Others think that maybe a neighbor lured him inside by asking for help since Jason was such a giving person. There's even been the suggestion that because he was so involved in the Catholic Church, maybe he made a complaint against a priest and paid the price. Some say that a neighbor sold their house at a loss after only living in the neighborhood for a short while, and that seems awfully suspicious. But I think the prevailing theory is that maybe someone he was familiar with saw him walking that day and offered to give him a ride that didn't end well. The articles from the time talk about Jason living on a quiet residential street, but there will always be the inevitable comment on every Reddit post where someone says that actually, the area wasn't so quiet and had issues with crime. 2 years ago, a man commented on Reddit that a few years after Jason's disappearance, he had an experience where a good Samaritan tried to offer him a ride one morning when he was out walking. He said the guy kept insisting on giving him a ride even though he hadn't even said which direction he needed to go, and he kept at it far longer than a normal person just trying to do a good deed would. It creeped this guy out, especially because he says he was about the same size as Jason at the time, with a similar appearance and also of Polish descent. The car luckily drove off when traffic approached from the other side. It's just absolutely impossible to know what happened to Jason, but stories like this keep stoking our imaginations. People ask questions online like, are there any cases with less evidence than this? And that's maybe why it continues to interest us so much, to keep people up at night wondering. Jason wasn't a person who would be considered at risk. He wasn't, as far as we know, into any drugs or gambling or gang activities. He disappeared in broad daylight. He was shy and wouldn't have taken a ride from a stranger. It seems like he just got unlucky. He could have been any of us. At the very least, Jason will be remembered with Jason's Law, which was signed into law in May 2005 on National Missing Children's Day. It established a missing persons clearinghouse in Nebraska to share information about missing persons of all ages and to give families a place to go for information. Thank you to Jason's family for all of the work they did to make this happen. Thank you for tuning into my podcast episode. I'm just a true crime fan like you are, and I really appreciate you taking a chance on me. Please subscribe and tell a friend if you like spending this time together. You can also find me on YouTube in the flesh by searching Katie Does Crime.